Canada's Morning News. This is Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien. Every month we check in with Windermere Chief Economist Matthew Gardner to see if your home is maintaining its value. So I noticed that listings are way down year over year for October.
That's right, Dave. Normally you see a slowdown as you come into the winter months. That's very, very traditional, kind of function of seasonality. But the big drop you're noticing, quite frankly, is because we saw a very large number of listings come on in middle to latter part of 2018. Why did that happen? There's a lot of investors, and a lot of investors were seeing at that point in time, believe it or not, mortgage rates were rising up. And so the price growth was slowing. They say, okay, perhaps now's the right time to get rid of my investment house. So therefore, the natural pull down, it's exaggerated because we had a big push in listing activity in homes for sale, middle to latter part of 2018.
Locally, have we reached the high water mark for home prices? I know a lot of families out there staying in their rental homes, just waiting for prices to start coming down. So when's that going to start, or has it already?
Well, you can say, yes, it has. I mean, if you look at, let's say, King County, year over year, prices are down almost 1.4%.
Which amounts to money terms?
Not a whole lot. I mean, $8,000 maybe. Okay. However, at the same time, compared to the previous month, prices are up by 2%.
Well, you still have bargains in Pierce and Snohomish counties, though, right?
The bargains in Pierce County are starting to erode a little bit, and that's kind of interesting. I mean, go back to what we've talked about before. If you could afford to live in King County, you did. If you couldn't afford that, you moved north. You headed up into Snohomish County. Mm-hmm. Well, over the last several months, the reason why Tacoma's been in the media a lot because of home prices, people are actually now saying, I can't afford to live in Snohomish County. Mm-hmm. I'm moving south. Mm-hmm. Why is that? There's about a $120,000 delta between home prices in Snohomish and Pierce. So we've seen a lot of interest, really, quite frankly, through the whole of this year, down in Pierce County. The problem there is still a remarkable lack of inventory, even more so than you're seeing up in King County.
So what's going to happen now that 976 has passed? We're caught up in lawsuits, infrastructure, because we talk a lot about people interested in Pierce County because of home prices, but there is really no transportation option down there.
And that's it. And personally, and as well as Windermere as a whole, very disappointed at the 976 pass. I think it was a measure which, whether you argue it should have been on the ballot or not, it's going to have significant influences over transportation, obviously. And what's the biggest problem? Why do we see home prices in King County as high as they are? Well, there's a value to our time. Mm-hmm. We will live closer to where we need to be.
But should car tabs be $400 or $500? I mean, that's where the vote came from. Nobody should be surprised.
Well, or maybe not. It was voted down in King County.
Right.
Now, there's an awful lot of Tesla drivers in King County that are paying $1,400 a year for their
car tabs.
Sure,
but they live near work.
Well, yes, but they're still willing to pay for it, though. That's okay. The thing. So, I mean, actually, the measure was voted down in, I believe, just three counties across the state. People vote with their pocketbooks.
Yeah.
And obviously, if you look east of the mountains, significantly so. Even though what's interesting about that is that the car tab increases away from the central Puget Sound. Yes, did they go up? Sure. They were still below $100. The saving was marginal. Where it went up dramatically was in the central Puget Sound. Mm. So people back east were thinking, you know, it's Seattle's problem. It's not my problem. Mm-hmm. But even that's erroneous as well. I mean, there are bridges and roads that need fixing.
Oh,
out in Grant
well,
County,
had
in
the state
County.
Thrown any money, when I was over in Spokane, I spent 5 years over there. Mm-hmm. There's a freeway called the North-South Freeway that leads to nowhere because the state refuses to continue to pay to build it. So I think you are seeing fed-up voters in the eastern central part of the state going, when are you going to give us something?
Right. And you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
But when you talk about it relative to housing, which obviously is my world, all it's going to do, it's going to further exacerbate issues over housing affordability. Mm-hmm. Again, you're going to have the housing.
So what will happen to the housing in the outlying places that are probably going to get less transit service now?
Oh, that's going to be a problem. I would expect to see, well, I mean, two things. One, obviously it's cheap. So there are people that will say, you know, they're going to gut it out. I've met people, the so-called super commuters, that will commute kind of 3-4 hours each way, which is insane, but they do it. So there will still be some of those. But I would argue, ultimately, it's going to have negative connotations to home price growth in those areas if it applies to people that do need to get into place of work. It was interesting. I believe that the measure was voted down in Jefferson County, which I thought was kind of somewhat unique. I'm not quite sure why that happened.
Well, as you say, it went down in three counties, including King County, which indicates that we may have to change the way we finance transportation, it seems to me. I mean, if you're going to have that big of a disconnect between people who want to spend money on things like roads and transit and those who, for whatever reason, don't, then give them what they want.
Absolutely. And here's going to be the problem. We're trying to encourage mass transit. It makes a lot of sense. Get on buses, get on trains. And people will do it if they can get to, from A to B effectively. If we're taking that away from people, what are they going to do? Jump in their single occupancy cars and hit the highways. That's not good for the environment. It's not good for us personally. So it's, I see both sides of the coin, certainly. But when it comes to housing and affordability and moving people around our region, it's remarkably hard.
Winterview Chief Economist Matthew Gardner. Matthew, thank you very much.
Always welcome.
Our resident historian Felix Waddell is usually a quiet fellow who inhabits a world of scratchy records, old radio scripts, and the rubble of demolished landmarks. But today, he just tore into the Cairo radio parking lot, leapt over the stairs to the front door, tornadoed through the newsroom like a Tasmanian devil, and kicked down the door to the studio. So what's going on?
It's a usual Friday. How is that different from last Friday, Dave?
Yeah.
No, there is really good news to report with 99.9% confirmation level that the old Macy's Bon Marché holiday star that about a month ago they said was never coming back, only to be reimagined next year, that old star is going to be on display this year.
Oh,
it's coming back.
Just this year?
That's hard to say. It could be part of the, what I understand is it could be part of the newly reimagined star that will be displayed next year. But this year, I can confidently say that sources tell me that that old star, which, you know, is about 50 years old now, it's been disrepair. They claim that the Macy's people claimed it was beyond repair, couldn't be fixed. But it is being fixed. As of a few days ago, a local sign company was up on the roof of the building, and they're doing the work necessary to get the wiring fixed and make it safe so it doesn't fall on the sidewalk below. But it's going to be up on this Friday after Thanksgiving. The 29th, it'll be part of the downtown ceremony, I assume. This is all, isn't completely confirmed, but I'm very confident making this, going out on a limb, as they say.
Where was it found?
It was always up on the roof in pieces.
See, that's what I thought.
Yeah, we got spy photo. Remember, you brilliantly said, why don't you look on Google Maps? I thought, God, why didn't I think of that? And I did. A friend of mine looked on Google Maps and found a picture from a year and a half ago of the pieces laid out on the roof, but yeah. It was an old photo. Then about a week later, a spy sent me photos of the pieces of the star out on the roof. And then, you know, just... I've heard from different people who are knowledgeable, and I trust them on this. They've been looking at and assessing it and trying to see if they could fix it, and it looks like that's the case. And it's they're investing money in the star, and it'll be back this year. That star that's been up there for 50 years, for the last time that Macy's, the remnants of Bon Marché, will be offering, you know, whatever they sell, 2-for-1 khaki pants or whatever, you'll be able to walk under that star as you go in to buy your holiday gifts for people for the last time.
Who did that to the star? Who left it in peace? This reminds me of your gargoyle story where history in Seattle is just tossed into the trash.
No, you know, if I had a spot on my roof behind my chimney, I'd keep my Christmas lights up there, too. It's
You'd
a big
cover
piece
them,
of metal.
Though.
You know, I think it might have been covered. It might have been, like, kind of stashed under something or covered with a tarp.
Then how did we see it on satellite? It was uncovered.
I believe that was part of the construction project because they built a penthouse on top of that building over the last few years. It opened, I think, 18 months ago or something. That's
I feel very protective of the star. I used to go downtown every year with my mom.
A lot of people
after Thanksgiving.
Do. Yeah.
It's a big part of Seattle history.
We heard from tons of listeners. That was the thing. That story came out on a Saturday at the end of September already. It was Nicole Broder column in the Times and saying that, you know, just an aside, and the star's not coming back. And I got emails almost right away from Cairo listeners saying, hey, why don't you look into that? You like lost causes. No. but, it took me about a week to get a straight answer out of anybody from Macy's, and it wasn't really a straight answer.
We still haven't found the gargoyles either, have we?
Yeah, there's still a reward. I remember I offered $100 for information leading to a recovery or knowledge of the final resting place of the gargoyles, but no one's ever taken me up on that. But fortunately, it doesn't sound like we need that, and it sounds like the day after Thanksgiving on that big festive day in downtown Seattle, that star will light up. It might be for the last time. It might be part of the my fantasy would be that it goes so well this year and people just, you know, show up by the thousands that it comes back exactly as it is next year, or at least some, if it's reimagined, that it's mostly with pieces from the old star.
My suggestion is that Felix Bunnell throws the switch when that star is
No, I don't think so. You know, I would rather have Wendy James, the daughter of Bob James. She started a Facebook page about 2 weeks ago. It got hundreds of likes. There's people responding from all over the place who want this thing to come back. It should be Bob James, the designer of the star, who passed away maybe several years ago. His family should be the ones. I'm just going to be, you know, anonymous in the crowd, sipping an eggnog latte and, disappearing into the darkness in my black suit and fedora.
Oh, man.
Thank you, Felix. Thanks. And congratulations.
Hey, Merry Christmas.
It
Merry
is.
Christmas, you old Bon Marché star!
Aww.
Seattle's Morning News. Yes, this is Friday morning. How do you get homeless people the help they need and get them connected to services? Now there's an app
that can do that, and the Seattle City Council wants to give it a shot, and Hannah Scott is here to explain how it works.
So this is called Samaritan, and it's kind of a smart wallet system. A Seattle startup launched as a pilot program a couple of years ago in the hopes of finding a new way to let everyday people help people who are dealing with homelessness. It works like this. Beacons are handed out to homeless people, and then on the flip side, anybody in the general public can download the Samaritan app on their smartphone and see the basic stories of various homeless people in the program and then donate that to them directly. They can use those donations then to go to various nonprofits, certain stores who are signed up with the program and get basic needs, you know, food, various things like that that they might need. Samaritan founder Jonathan Kumar pitched the plan to the city council earlier this year to expand that program. It had been done without any city money. One key aspect of this is getting more people to accept services, and the app helps with that by requiring the homeless people with the beacons to meet with a caseworker once a month if they want to keep that beacon active.
Beacon holders have both the opportunity but also responsibility. If they've gotten enough value from the beacon to want to continue to use it, they've got an opportunity to have what we call a life care visit with a counselor at a nonprofit. So it's about a 10 to 15 minute conversation where they're talking about how the last month went, they're setting goals for the month ahead, and they're sharing their greatest financial needs to getting there. They have an opportunity to share that progress update with supporting Samaritans, and we see about 99% of beacon holders opt in to that opportunity to share with the Samaritan community.
And through various council meetings, I've had a chance to hear from both sides, some of the people who are giving, the Samaritans who are donating, and they love that interaction, being able to communicate and see.
So it works. So as I recall, because this did pilot.
It piloted a couple of years ago.
A couple of years ago, yeah.
Not so at city.
Yeah, so I had downloaded it, and the idea was you'd be walking by a homeless person.
You can, yes.
And it would trigger the app, mm-hmm. and the story would pop up, and you could decide to donate. It never triggered. I guess was I not walking close enough to the person? I mean, what's the range there?
And there's and I'm not sure what the range is. And you have to be signed up for a specific thing for that to trigger, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And there's other ways that they get people. That's not the only way that they get people signed up.
But the idea was, when you're in the proximity of a homeless mm-hmm. person, that person's profile will pop up on your smartphone.
If they're in that system. So that could be that there wasn't anyone in that system, or maybe it was early in the pilot, but it sounds like they had any bugs for that worked out mm-hmm. at this point. Raven, he is one of the homeless people who got help from this, and he says it's been a huge deal.
It's the fact that they actually take the time, the effort to care, the fact that I have to check in once a month. You know, a lot of people are like, well, that's responsibility. Yes. Homeless people, most of us want a responsibility. It's hard for some of us because of the background, because of a drug addiction or what have you. So most people look at us really down. But a lot of us, you know, trying to get a job, trying to go to school, trying to do stuff, we want that responsibility.
So that's from the pitch a few months back to the city council. Here in the budget cycle that we're in right now, Council President Bruce Harrell is pitching having the city get involved and launch its own pilot program. And he said the results from the original pilot is why.
So what we do know is that 500 people have used these life connectors or these medallions. There's been over $100,000 of private money transferred to these organizations. And from that, over half of these people have reported receiving a major financial or social need and have enrolled in services. Many have moved into housing and treatment. And about 10,000 people in the city have actually downloaded the app and sort of used this.
So they've seen some good results.
Yeah. So why would the city have to get involved in this? It seems to be working fine on its own.
The city wants to use its own human services dollars to have its own program, to have a city-backed program, and they're not the only ones. L.A. and New York also mm-hmm. just got involved with Samaritan to just expand it. It's just an expanded program is all, mm-hmm. to have city dollars in it. And when they pitched this, so this was last Friday that Bruce Harrell put this forward as part of the budget in the hope of getting it in the budget, so many people came out, the people who do the casework, the people who are homeless, and the people who give.
Money for food, money for clothing.
As a human being, we all need a little hope, encouragement, or to know that someone out there care.
It gives them hope, and it reminds them that they are a part of this community, and there are people in this community that care about them and want them to succeed.
It's gratifying to be able to read their stories, to be able to add a sense of who they are, aside from just a face that you might encounter on the street.
I know it's going to be used for good things. I know the person I'm giving it to is actually going to be able to keep it. And I know that they're also checking in with somebody that's trying to help them figure out how to find a path forward.
So the city is starting right now in the budget, which hasn't been approved yet. It's just a small ask of $75,000. Mm-hmm. The company wanted about $164,000.
So is the company providing this for free, or do they make money on this?
It is a for-profit, but they work for now. The goal is to be nonprofit eventually.
Do they take a percentage like a GoFundMe page would do? Or?
Yeah, I believe so. And what they're trying to do is get to, so they had a projection through 2021 where they wanted to get 2,500 more beacons out there. Mm-hmm. Based on some income or some money from the city. The city's starting small with 7,500. So we're looking at maybe another 400 or 500 beacons that could be done if this makes it through the budget. And there you go.
All right. Car Radio's Hannah Scott. Thank you, Hannah.
You bet.
It was a pivotal battle, maybe the pivotal battle in the Pacific, the Battle of Midway, and Cairo film critic Tom Tangney is here. It includes real historical figures, not composite characters, yep. And we're going to have him reach into his pocket of tangs in a moment. So tell us about Midway.
So, yeah, you're right, Dave. The new World War II movie Midway is midway between being a terrible movie and a so-so movie, but it's nowhere near being a good movie. And that's a shame because the history is plenty dramatic and the material will be quite fresh, I think, to most young moviegoers. So I think this is something of a missed opportunity. Its 10 lead characters are all based on real named people. So the film has historical accuracy going for it, at least by Hollywood standards. But real people thinly drawn do not make him for compelling drama, no matter how hair-raising the circumstances they find themselves in. Midway tells the real-life story of the war's most important naval battle in the Pacific. After the surprise attack on Pearl Harbor, the U.S. Navy is determined to never again be caught flat-footed by the Japanese.
Pearl Harbor is the greatest intelligence failure in American history.
This can never happen again.
The Battle of Midway took place a mere 6 months later. Despite the presence of much better-known figures like Admiral Nimitz, played by Woody Harrelson, and Vice Admiral Bull Halsey, played by Dennis Quaid, the film gives a refreshing amount of screen time early on to Naval Intelligence Officer Edwin Layton, played by Patrick Wilson. His warnings about a possible Pearl Harbor attack had gone unheeded, and he was now tasked with ferreting out Japan's next big move. His team of encryption experts and code breakers eventually singled out a tiny two-mile atoll called Midway, an American surprise attack on a Japanese surprise attack on the American base in Midway was set in motion. In war, as in life, things never go according to plan, but failure, as they say, was not an option.
If we lose the Japanese on the West Coast, Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles,
the movies. I got the Seattle reference in there.
Yes, you did. And that would have been bad.
That's right. The movie then kicks into daring do mode. First, it goes a little off topic to cover Lieutenant Colonel Jimmy Doolittle's daring raid over Tokyo, and then it redirects its attention to the Battle of Midway for the last half of the movie. The film jumps around a lot between Admiral Nimitz plotting strategy, Bull Halsey commanding but also trying to hide an illness, brash dive bomber Dick Best getting frustrated with the military brass, Lieutenant Commander Wade McCluskey taking guff from Best but proving him wrong in the end, Pilot Bruno Gato taking death-defying risks, and many others, often nameless, exhibiting unadulterated fear, determination, and bravado. The Japanese commanders also get a fair share of screen time as they plot and battle and plot some more. It's admirable, I suppose, that the film wants to incorporate as many aspects and angles of a military operation as it can, but it comes at the cost of emotional resonance. It's hard to cheer the success, or share the worry, or grieve the loss of people who you've barely gotten to know. Instead of insights into the psyches of the various men under duress, the film offers cliched lines of dialogue like,
"You'll remember this moment for the rest of your life."
Well, if you're about to risk near certain death, I would certainly hope if you're lucky enough to survive, you would remember it for the rest of your life. I'm not sure that needed to be said. Like a lot of war movies, though, the scenes that work best in Midway are the battles themselves. The aerial dogfights, the dive bombing planes, the submarine torpedo attacks, the carrier deck explosions are all elaborate CGI effects, but they are at times quite gripping. If the battle scenes are all you care about in a war movie, and I realize this might be the main and principal draw, then Midway fills that bill. But even here, the very strength of the movie is undercut, or at least compromised by a lack of context. The military strategies are so poorly explained that most of the time, the individual action sequences work only as individual action sequences and not as part of some greater whole. In other words, the film shows us what's happening, but not why it's happening the way that it is. And that's disappointing to those of us who want more than just the visceral excitement of a video game. It's a waste of good history. Seeing Midway, though, in the end, is not a bad way to acknowledge Veterans Day. A better way to honor veterans would have been for Midway to be a better movie.
So did you prefer the earlier version of Midway that used the composite characters?
No, not at all. In fact, the nice thing about that is they stripped out. There's no corny love story. Yeah. There's no, you know, imaginary father-son dilemma. No, I like that. I just think it could have been more historically accurate. Maybe not have as many characters, focus on four or five of the real characters and the dilemma they face. And I think it might have been a more resonant movie. But I also was most frustrated. I said, you know, this is good. I like to see, I love military strategy in movies.
Yeah.
If they had done a better job, they have all those boards out and they have all the, you know, they're moving the ships here and there, but they don't explain it well enough to understand when you're up in the air, why they're doing what they're doing. And I think that was a missed opportunity.
Well, I'm just glad we won.
That's right. Absolutely. That we did.
We're singing for that. How many Tangs for Midway?
I'll give it 2 out of 4.
There we go. Tom Tangney, part of Tom and Curly, which comes on at 9 o'clock right here on Cairo Radio.
By the way, you know, I did that review because somebody requested Seattle Mornings News. Please ask Tom, in honor of the vets, to review Midway. And so I did. And I hope they're happy.
We respond to every listener request.
That's right.
Time for your daily dose of kindness. How about that? Veterans Day is Monday. How will you thank our nation's heroes? In Louisiana, a group of women with a special talent are wrapping veterans in love.
My grandmother, when I was 6, we would quilt in her sewing barn. And she would always say, come on, magic fingers, do your thing. And when you're a child, you're looking for the magic.
Sure enough. Gail Boyd is part of a group called Quilt Queens. They spend their spare time inside the sewing shop in Shreveport putting together intricate quilts that they will donate to veterans who've been nominated.
We have a lot of our veterans that don't have family, and we want to share that love with them, you know, wrap them in the quilt. So that's what we do.
They are called Quilts of Valor. KSLA says the group has made 35 quilts so far with no plans to stop after Veterans Day.
I am so blessed. So blessed that I can do this. It's just an honor to be able to do this for our veterans.
Seattle's Morning News. This is Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien. It is time once again to Ask Allie with Allie Sokolow, licensed mental health counselor, brought to you by Pro Club, the Northwest Premier Center for Health and Wellness. Learning to say no. This happens so many times, and it's especially hard for people who are really nice, generous people pleasers, right? So let's take an example. So they get a call from an out-of-town friend. They're flying into town. Can you pick them up at the airport? And they're not even offering to buy you dinner or anything. Really, they just want, and you see this, a free ride from the airport. How do you say no to that?
This is under the category of let's learn to set boundaries for ourselves. So when we say no to people, we either get pushed into saying yes, and then we start to feel very resentful, or we feel so guilty that we can't live with ourselves, and so we'll never say no again. Those are the two sides of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And so it's learning about being okay saying no, and whatever reaction you get, that's okay.
So be prepared for the person to possibly be mad at you?
Yeah, so let me ask you something. If your best friend was flying in and you said, no, you can't pick him up at the airport, would your best friend be mad at you and never talk to you again?
Probably. Well, if I had a good explanation.
What if you didn't, though? What if you were exhausted, you've worked all week, and you just can't sit in Seattle traffic?
I would probably say, I wouldn't say any of that. I'd say, I wish I could, but I'm sorry, I just can't.
That's a great answer because you didn't lie, right? Will your friend accept that answer if they're truly your friend?
Yeah. See, usually the way I think of it is, would I accept the answer if the roles were reversed?
Here's the thing. I think we have to expect if we ask somebody to do a favor for us that it's okay for them to say no.
Yeah.
And it's okay to ask too. But you can't be scared of hearing the word no either.
Yeah.
Because, and I think a lot of people fall into this trap of, I want to avoid the feeling of guilt so much. And that kind of guilt isn't something that we need to be ashamed about or worry about. Guilt's supposed to be there so we don't do really bad things in life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't go hurt somebody. You should feel guilty yeah. about that, right?
Yeah. So I have to learn that it isn't really hurting someone simply to say no.
No, that's the thing.
Yeah.
That's why it's sort of unnecessary guilt.
What about when it comes to parties? Because if you don't go to somebody's party, why would they want to come to yours, you see? And then you feel like a social failure if nobody comes to your party.
Well, that was really deep. Like, you went way into that. Like, that's a dark... I mean, here's the thing. If you're so tired that you can't go to a party on Friday night,
yeah.
you get to say no. And, like, don't set yourself up as, if I say no to everything, nobody's going to come to mine.
Yeah.
Like, that's like zero boundaries with the rest of the world.
Huh.
You know, there are going to be people who won't come to your next party, but maybe it's because they're in the same situation and they just can't do it.
Yeah. So I guess avoid getting into the extended narrative that
yes.
saying no is going on your permanent record. I'm one of those people who's really worried about their permanent record, Allie. I still worry about some of the things I did back in the fourth grade. Okay.
Oh, gosh. Well, if I could encourage you to just let those things go,
yeah.
that would help. But here's the deal. Like, that's right. We can rationalize anything. We can talk ourselves into anything. And so if you're feeling like no, then say no.
Yeah.
It's okay.
And then what's the next part of that conversation where, let's say I'm the person asking for the ride from the airport and my friend says, oh, sorry, no, I can't do it. I shouldn't come back and say, well, why not?
No.
Is that right?
If I could give any advice, I would say give your friends a break and just accept no and not ask why.
So I just say, that's fine. No problem. Just thought I'd ask.
Yes.
Have a good day.
Yes. And then, you know, as the person who said no, you can say, hey, I'm around tomorrow. Would you want to catch up tomorrow? Where mm-hmm. are you staying? You know, something like
yeah.
that. If you want to see that.
Oh,
person.
So even you would have a fallback.
I do.
To make it clear that it is not...
It's not personal.
It's not personal, right?
Yeah. It's like the party situation, right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh my gosh, that sounds so fun. I'm not going to be able to make it.
Right.
Let's try to get together next week.
Yeah. That's so fun, but my moon launches tomorrow and I can't miss that.
That's...
I just want to have a really
right.
good excuse is what I'm saying.
No, I know you yeah. do, but I challenge you to not have an excuse
I
at all.
Have an excuse.
Yeah.
That's my next... That's what I have to work on for my personal growth.
That's right.
And that's why we ask Allie. Allie Sokolo, licensed mental health counselor. Thank you, Allie.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. Thanks for listening to the show's podcast. We're happy you're here.
And you can keep up with the show and find some of the stories from today online at MyNorthwest.com.